Introducing Hump, the hookup app for guys and girls looking for a no-strings-attached relationship. Hump. Over 5 million guys have downloaded Hump, and as soon as a woman does, it's gonna be awesome. Hump. With Hump, you'll meet like-minded singles in your area who are eager to get down and dirty. But for our business model to work, we need women to sign up for Hump. Hump. Because right now, it's just 5 million guys looking to meet that special temporary someone without bothering with dinner or dates. Doesn't that sound fantastic? Hump. The first woman to download Hump will be swarmed with attention, guaranteed. So what are you waiting for, ladies? You could have an inbox full of penis pics in minutes. Hump. Download Hump. Men think it's a great idea. Why don't you? You're listening to Questionable Material, produced in New York by Jack Helmuth and Brian Sack. QMPodcast.com. What you did, a baseball thing?
Yeah, so we're having fall baseball this year because, you know, as all sports were canceled, Little League was canceled this spring. So this is a chance to play some fall baseball.
Okay.
And with masks and all, with all sorts of safety protocols.
Fun.
In place, but where the kids can actually play some ball.
Sports.
Sports, yeah. Now, I know you don't know anything about sports, but I know you know a heck of a lot about 9-year-old boys. Obviously, you had two boys who were once nine. And then, before the courts intervened, you spent a lot of time with a lot of different 9-year-old boys. And I was wondering if you could sort of tell me some different ways that, to speak on their level, to sort of, to connect with them and make sure that they get the most out of what I have to teach them about baseball.
Sure.
You can start. You can start now. It's totally fine. A lot of the feedback we've been getting is that long pauses typically are unsettling to listeners.
You know, we're from two different schools of podcasting, Jack. You think long silence pauses are bad, and I think they're good. I think it's what people want to hear.
Okay, we should probably market test this.
I don't like to market test things. I like to just put it out there and see what the market dictates. I'm a free market person.
No, yeah, that would, I am too. I am too. But maybe we should just, I agree to disagree. It's fine. So what sort of advice do you have for me to, connect with 9-year-olds?
Well, to connect with 9-year-olds?
Yeah, 9, 10-year-old boys.
Well, you want to be on their level, so you got to talk about all the latest memes. A lot of what I learned about 9-year-old kids, I learned while on safari.
What?
Yeah. So like on a safari, you'll see animals and they run in packs, right? And there's always that kind of that leader of the pack. Mm-hmm. And that kind of has to be you when you're around 9-year-old kids. Like you're the tiger and they're the cubs. Right?
Okay. That makes sense, I guess.
So, it's all about establishing authority. They need to look up to you, to respect you, to really in some ways fear you and your wrath, your anger. If you start smashing the window unit, the AC unit's not working, and you open the window and you throw it into the street in front of them and you're screaming and cursing and you pull down their shelf, then they learn that they respect you. They know you're not to be trifled with. You want to have that alpha male thing. It's very, very similar to the animal kingdom. So what you want to do is really be that. You want to be the leader of the pride of lions.
So, okay.
So good example, you take your 9-year-old, you go for a walk. All right.
Okay.
And you're walking and you'll see somebody walking their dog. We say it's like a little yippy thing, like a Peking geese or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I want you to just stop in your tracks and you stare at it.
Okay.
And you're at this point, your 9-year-old, he's going to look at you. He's observing you. He's learning. He's not saying anything. You're not saying anything, but you're showing by doing. So you're going to look at that dog, that Peking geese, and you're just going to arch up your back, and then you just bolt over to it, and you bite it as hard as you can in the back of the neck, and then you just start going at it. And you're not a lion, you're not a tiger, so you don't have the benefit of claws. So if you have a pocket knife, you have a pencil, you have anything that would work, a protractor, whatever it takes. And you want to rip that thing. Usually they go for the belly. So that's the softest part. So, you're going to
rip that thing open and you're just going to dig into it. Dig into it and dig, and don't listen. You know, the squeals of the dog doesn't matter. The squeals of the woman holding the dog doesn't matter. Ignore, you know, if you're being hit with an umbrella or kicked or whatever, ignore it. You just dig into that. Your son is going to watch this. He's 9 years old. He's going to watch this. He's going to observe. He's learning as you're doing it. And he's showing, you know, how daddies work, how, you know, and you're establishing your dominance. You're the leader of the pack. And you're going to shred that Peking geese, or it doesn't matter. It could be a poodle, whatever. And then you're going to run back to your son with your bloodied face and your crazed eyes. And you're going to just start looking at him and then just kind of nuzzle and just get some blood on him and show him, you know, show him the love,
you know, show him the love,
show him the love that you're, you know, you're a killing machine, but you're also a loving parent.
Okay. So it's important. Okay. It's important to show that. Okay. That's rough. I got to be honest with you. I do, as you know, I always take walks with the kids and, with a protractor, just in case, you know, a math problem comes up. Mm-hmm. So I'm prepared for what you lay out, but gosh, it does seem violent. I mean, kids, from my experience, kids typically like animals. So I'm worried that this is going to push them further away.
Yeah. I mean, what you got to do is you got to teach them not to get too close to certain animals like Peking geese, dogs, the little ones.
Or mommies.
Remember, you know, you're an animal, right?
Right.
You're a 9-year-old kid, you love him, whatever. But at the end of the day, he's an animal.
He's a write-off, but yeah, I love him, I guess. Yeah.
He's a write-off, he's a vertebrate, whatever. And, you know, you just got to kind of let him know that the world, you know, it's the jungle out there. It's literally a jungle. You want to show him by doing jungle things. And that's why, you know, I wish we had warthogs here or ibexes or even zebras, but, you know, we don't. So Peking geese is what it is. That's the law of the jungle in the city.
Right. Yeah, gosh. Okay. I'll do what you say. I always take your advice. Now, that's a way for my son to sort of connect with me and to sort of realize that I'm the person he needs to listen to. Mm-hmm. But what about all these sort of strange boys that are going to be around me? How do I show them that that I'm the boss?
Well,
because I've got like 13 strange boys who don't know me, looking at me, and they're sort of questioning me. I can see it in their little beady eyes, because that's all I can see of them, because they're all wearing masks.
Yeah.
They're all like, you know, who's this, you know, who's this guy? Who's this handsome, tall man telling me what to do? I'm not sure I trust what this is.
I mean, I have a hard time thinking of them thinking that, but I understand what you mean. So you got 13 kids, and you've got to impress upon them that you are the boss, you're in charge. And they need to respect you and look up to you, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, you got to go after the runt. So you want to look, you got 13 kids, you got to, you know, study them and you look for the weak link.
Okay.
They, you know, no matter what anybody says, we're all not equal, right? Some people
that's
are
true.
Smarter. Some that's people true. Are stronger. Some people are prettier. What, you know, that's the reality of things. That's the jungle. So you got to look at these kids. You got to find the one that is the weakest, the ugliest, the one who wouldn't be able to help you guys. He's the least helpful to your team. Okay. To your pride. And you want to see him and you just want to kind of arch your head and steer and then just run after him screaming. Ideally, he's going to take off and, you know, being honest, he's the run. It's probably the best running he'll ever do.
Well, I'm sure, but I mean, I've got long legs and he's still being the runt, you know, being a small kid, because I already know who I'm going to take out. I'm going to be able to catch up to him in a heartbeat. What do I do then?
All right. Well, you know, you want to be fair, because we're animals, but we're fair. So you do it on your knees. You get on your knees and you chase after him. But you make it very clear that if you catch him, he will die. You want to drive that point home, because first of all, it's going to impress upon him that he needs to get out of there. But it's also going to impress upon the 12 remaining members of your team that you mean business. You are the leader of the pack. You're the head of the pride.
It's really good.
Yeah.
This is really good stuff. So it's again, just to make sure I'm getting this right, sort of the opposite of prison rules, right? You go into prison, you immediately find the toughest, baddest mother humper in that jail, and you go and you sock him in the mouth.
Right.
And sort of show that you're not to be messed with.
You're not scared.
Here, you find the weak one. Because that's
right.
Much more in line with my belief system.
That's the law of the jungle. You're establishing your dominance. You're establishing who you are.
So this way I can be sure that the kids will never miss the cutoff man.
Yeah, they will. I mean, they will be so good at baseball by the end of this because they you will have put into them the fear of offending you, of making you upset, making you angry with them. They've seen what happens. They know what you did to the Peking geese dog or any other small dog that barks a lot. They know what you did to the runt of the team. All right. You chased him off on your knees or you threw him off the roof, whatever appeals to you more. And they're not going to trifle with you. You will have their allegiance and their maximum effort. They will be putting in 100%.
That's really good to hear because flags fly forever. You know, I really want to win a 9-year-old championship this year.
Another thing I would do, you find the coach, you get out there on the field with the coach and you kind of, you duel him. You swagger, you walk around him. And at some point you charge in an attack.
I hate this idea. I think this is a terrible idea because the other coach has the ability to fight back. And that is not the way I like to fight.
One thing you can do, since, you know, this, once again, we're talking about the law of the jungle and the wild, you know, nature, which is violent and mean and merciless, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so you want to show the kids this. You want to teach the kids this lesson. So what you could do is you take a bike helmet or a motorcycle helmet and you put a rake on it, an iron rake. You know, it's kind of like antlers.
Uh-huh.
And then you just go head-to-head with the other coach. Kind of like the mating ritual you see elk do, except you're not trying to mate. You're just trying to impress the kids.
So, Brian.
Yeah, Jim.
I want to talk to you about, you know, we've got these wildfires going on in California. Right?
They are wild. I mean, that's what I think.
No, not in sort of like a, not in a cool type of wild, like Girls Gone Wild. This is more of a, like, they're out of control and killing people and burning land and damaging the earth in ways that we may never recover. Like that type of wild.
What I say is stop that.
Oh, man. So PC.
I wish I were the governor.
God, you're so predictable.
The governor of California. I'd be like, stop this nonsense now.
It's good.
Stop it.
It's good. You're going to get votes.
Stop the fires.
Here's the thing, Brian. There have been a lot of wildfires in the news in the last year or two. One trend I have noticed is that there have been a couple of incredibly deadly and damaging wildfires that have started due to really sort of strange reasons, including a giant fire in California that has burned through 19,000 acres that was started by the pyrotechnics of a gender reveal.
Right.
So they were, you know, they're going to have like this little explosion. It was going to be a blue or pink powder, depending on the gender.
Right.
Or green, you know, for the mystery gender that now exists.
Right.
And the pyrotechnics of the sort of cool explosion set a bunch of brush on fire and it started a massive fire that will do irreparable damage. And I find that to be interesting. And I know you know a lot about this stuff. And I was wondering if you could tell us that not a lot of people know about many of the other disasters that have happened in the world that have also happened under sort of surprising circumstances. And I was wondering if you could sort of tell us about how some of these other disasters happened.
Yeah, there's a backstory to a lot of disasters, like you said, that's always very interesting and fascinating. Mm-hmm. And I fortunately remember them, so I can share those with you.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, that's great. The San Francisco fire of 1906, a lot of people would be surprised when they hear, you know, normally it's, you know, something starts in a factory or there's, you know, too much wood or at a place and a loose ember from a fireplace. And then all of a sudden half the city is burned down. But you told me there's a really interesting way that the great 1906 San Francisco fire started that had nothing to do with the earthquake that also took place. So what happened?
Well, I mean, it's funny how his story has been erased from history.
Nice.
Elmo Watkins is really the reason behind that fire.
Oh.
So Elmo Watkins was an inventor.
Okay.
He was kind of crazy. And he was obsessed with giants. He believed that somewhere in an island in this Pacific lived a lot of giants. And he thought that they might have a bad time reading menus. And so Elmo Watkins devoted his life to designing a really big magnifying glass that Giants could use to read menus when they went to Giant restaurants. So he lived in a townhouse in San Francisco.
That's nice.
On Quaron Street.
And what street was that?
Quaron Street.
God, the microphone keeps cutting out. Don't worry about it. Keep going.
And so he lives on the street in a nice townhouse. And on his roof, he began building a giant magnifying glass.
Okay.
The idea being, when he built it, once it was complete, he was going to find out where these giants live, show up on this island with his giant magnifying glasses and be like, look what I brought you people as a token of goodwill.
You people. Oof.
You will never have a problem reading menus again.
Mm-hmm.
So he builds this thing on his townhouse roof, and it's very, very large. And, you know, he decides he wanted to stand it up. And so it stood up, and he was using just a variety of cables, but the cables came from China. And even though they said stainless steel, they weren't.
Oh.
And they began to rust. And at some point, the cables gave, and the giant magnifying glass tumbled off of his townhouse into the street, creating a heck of a clamor. It shook the ground. A lot of people mistook that for an earthquake. And then what happened was, you wouldn't believe it, the magnifying glass was leaned up against the house belonging to a gasoline hoarder. And I mean, the rest of the story is history. I mean, the magnifying glass intensified the beams of the sun. It went right into the gasoline hoarder's house. And I mean, that thing just burst into flames and boom. I mean, the town was, you know, didn't have a chance, because the other thing was there had recently been a campaign it was called the Let's Not Have Fire Engines campaign. City government thought they could save money if they didn't have fire engines.
Oh, defund the fire department campaign.
Defund the fire department.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, they went along with it. People were like, yeah, sure, I guess so. So there was no fire department. So people could only stand around and watch the buildings on fire. And then they got angry because the CNN correspondent said, I don't see any problem with this. This looks great to me. And they chased him out of town. At 12 miles an hour, because cars then didn't go very fast.
No, totally. And CNN was in very few homes at that point.
Yep, very few. He literally had to show up at your house. Yeah, so that's the story of the Chicago quote-unquote earthquake and
San
fire.
Francisco. I don't even want to hear the Chicago story. I hear that one's dark.
You're right. That is the story of the San Francisco earthquake and fire.
Man, well, thank you for telling us that. That's a rough one. That's a rough to hear.
I love sharing history with people who don't know what really happened.
Well, then you're going to love telling our listeners about the 2010 Haiti earthquake. Now, this is one that we can all remember, when Haiti was just leveled, just destroyed by an earthquake just 10 years ago. And really sad. But maybe it wasn't a bunch of tectonic plates shifting around underneath the surface is what you're telling me. Is that right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, see, that's the thing. So Haiti is known for producing empty plastic bottles. And so if you've been to Haiti or if you've looked at it on Google Maps, you'll see that there are incredible piles of empty plastic bottles. The Dominican side of the island is very unhappy about this. But there was a grand plan in Haiti, and they said, you know, these plastic bottles are an eyesore. They're just piles and piles of plastic bottles. They're not going anywhere. What can we do with them? And somebody said, well, let's build more Haiti. So they dug a big hole and they poured all the plastic bottles in it. And then they covered it up with dirt. And then they put a ton of buildings on top of it. And, you know, I don't know if you know anything about structural engineering on top of land that's built primarily by plastic bottles.
I took 2 years of it in college, but I wouldn't say I know a lot about it.
Well, you know, that stuff gives, you know.
It's not
bedrock, right? You know, you're building a skyscraper. You want to go down to bedrock. You want to solid surface that you can build on, right?
Right, right, right.
And you don't really have that with plastic bottles. They tend to not have anything inside of them. They tend to be made of thin plastic. So when they're compressed under the weight of buildings, they eventually give. Huh. So was it an earthquake?
Would not have
thought of that. Yeah. I mean, was it an earthquake? Yeah. I mean, in the sense that the earth quaked, but was it nature? Was it tectonic plates rubbing against one another? No, it was a city built on empty plastic bottles.
Huh. That's really interesting. And, you know, what happened after the earthquake to all those plastic bottles?
Well, they were dug up and put back on the beach.
It's a beautiful country to visit, I hear.
I don't know who told you that. But I don't believe you've used TripAdvisor.
No, I'm sure I haven't.
What's fascinating is when I was in Dominican Republic, which shares the island of Hispaniola yep. with them, they hate the Haitians.
I know. They do.
There's so much hatred. I couldn't believe it. And I know, like, everywhere you go, when you travel, it's always like, I hate my neighbor kind of thing.
Yep.
You go to Poland, oh, they hate the Germans, they hate the Russians. You know, you go to England, they hate the French. Yeah. The Peruvians hate the Bolivians.
Keep going with adjacent countries. This is interesting. This is good for a comedy podcast.
The Cubans hate the waters.
Another disaster, just a few more here, because so many interesting stories.
Thank you.
The Johnstown flood of 1889.
Yeah, the Johnstown flood. So the mayor of Johnstown was a guy named William Emmelman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he was the mayor of Johnstown.
Mm-hmm.
And he had I don't know if you ever heard the chicken in every pot.
Nope.
Well, you know, when I'm elected, there'll be a chicken in every pot. You know, everybody's going to get fed.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of thing. Yeah. Well, he was a little different. You know, he had the same idea of I'm going to give you stuff. But what he wanted to give people was Olympic-sized swimming pools. And so he had this grand idea that every single person who lived in the town would have an Olympic-sized swimming pool.
And that's pretty ambitious for 1889.
Yeah, and it was either in their backyard or on their roof, depending on where they lived or in the middle of, you know, unlike many mayors, he lived up to his promises and everyone did get an Olympic-sized swimming pool.
Oh, cool.
And what happened was they had a heck of a winter and all the swimming pools froze.
Yep, classic Pennsylvania.
Yep. And then he said, why don't we make a giant pyramid from all the ice from these swimming pools? By the time spring came, they had this enormous pyramid made out of ice, which came from Olympic-sized swimming pools, big blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And then spring hit and it all melted and it killed a ton of people.
I don't mean to laugh. I have a lot of friends in Ohio and we hate Pennsylvania. That's the only reason I'm laughing. Oh, God, which sort of proves your point from a minute ago.
There you go.
Neighbors hate neighbors.
That's why we hate New Jersey.
Yeah, we sure do. Those scumbags. Why do I let my daughter go to school there? Well, I'm so interested in this because the first modern Olympics, as you know, took place in 1896 in Athens.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, that's before the Johnstown flood. So I'm a little confused about how 7 years before the modern day Olympics began, how this mayor, Elmer Furt or whatever his name was, mm-hmm. Was thinking about Olympic sized swimming pools.
He'd heard a rumor that the Olympics was coming.
Oh,
you know, he'd heard,
yeah, I guess politicians hear that stuff.
He'd heard some buzz that there was going to be this organization that was going to form that would eventually be, you know, a massive, somewhat corrupt organization that was going to run roughshod over various countries.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, tell me, I mean, what are they going to do for swimming? He was obsessed with swimming.
Johnstown flood. Who knew? Just a couple more. Everyone, I don't even need to set this one up. The Hindenburg.
Oh, yeah.
Tell people how they think that giant dirigible exploded and tell us the real story.
Well, I mean, the real story, I mean, what everybody seems to understand is, yes, the Hindenburg was this Zeppelin. Mm-hmm. From Germany.
Yes.
That, you know, we're in the 30s now. The Nazis haven't gotten super Nazi yet, right?
Right.
They're just little, they're just Nazi, not little Nazi. They had the swastikas, but they weren't murdering everybody yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so they came over to New Jersey. And as everybody knows, there, something happened during the mooring. And the thing burst into flames. And because it was made out of hydrogen, the gas was highly flammable. I mean, once that lit up, I mean, the whole thing just burnt, and I believe 37 or so people got killed.
Yeah.
Well, the reality is, the captain, Chuck Harriman of the Hindenburg,
mm-hmm.
I guess it wasn't Chuck, it was Gerhardt, because he's German. He let his wife parallel park the blimp. Yeah.
Man.
She was doing good for a second, and then she hesitated and hit the gas, and that's when it hit the bumped into the tether, and then just all hell broke loose.
Huh, they don't talk about that.
They don't. You know, it's not really politically correct.
Yeah. I hear the original broadcast didn't contain "Oh, the humanity." They said something else sort of more disparaging and have since added "Oh, the humanity" to make it a little bit more palatable. What was the original sort of broadcast? What did the broadcast originally say?
Originally, it was "That stupid broad! That stupid broad!" And, yeah, you know, over time it changes. You know, the words people can say, you know, nobody says broad anymore. I don't say gams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it changes over time, but then the history changes over time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's a very unpleasant stereotype, the stereotype of the woman who has a hard time parallel parking. That's been erased from history.
That's sad. Yeah. It's sad, the assault that has taken place on history.
Yeah, no, it's terrible.
That is terrible. Last one, yep. The Justice League movie.
The Justice League movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A lot of people just think it was just a really super, 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 super shitty movie. But it's a lot more than that, you said.
Yeah, I'm not super familiar with the movie.
That's why it's going to be a challenge for you to remember this piece of history.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the Justice League movie. Yeah, the Justice League, obviously, was a group of people who engaged in class action litigation. And in this particular instance, they were suing a company that made shoelaces on behalf of the American public, mm-hmm. because the end of the shoelace, the tip, mm-hmm. which is called the aglet.
Sure.
The little tip of the shoelace called the aglet. And those in this one particular case, the aglet came off.
Oh,
and caused a lot of mental anguish to people who had a harder time tying their shoes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, agletless shoelaces are devastating to the human psyche. At least that's what these lawyers were saying. So they sued the shoelace company for $350 million on behalf of the American public. And, mm-hmm. And if they did win the case, and I don't want any spoilers for mm-hmm. the movie. So if they do win the case, then the lawyers are going to get $349 million. And then $1 million will be distributed to the 865,000 people who purchased those particular shoelaces.
Right, right, right.
Anyway, right. That's the whole premise of the movie.
Yeah, and so a lot of people when, you know, were thinking, oh, this is going to be Batman and Superman teaming up and beating people up. And, and they were just incredibly devastated by this 3.5 hour long Kevin Costner-led legal drama.
Yeah. I mean, the first hour is like discovery phase. I mean, it's just people with piles of paperwork and just like loading stuff into trucks. I mean, it's slow build.
Right, right, right. It's like The Irishman, but longer, but nothing happens.
Yep.
Yep. Well, that makes a lot of sense. A lot of people just think they hear it as just like, oh, I guess they kind of got Batman and Superman wrong or whatever it was. Thank you, Brian. Yeah. And we learned a hell of a lot about the world's greatest disasters, and I thank you.
I thank you, Jack.
For what? I'd like to know what you're thanking me for.
For asking me questions and letting me share my knowledge.
Okay, that was a good answer.
Because there's, like Shakespeare said, there's nothing sadder than some dude who knows things and doesn't tell everybody about it.
Like aglets and what countries are near each other.
That's right.
Hey, Brian.
Yeah.
Whoa. Oh my gosh, it's like audio Viagra. So Brian, you probably heard about this. You're a man who follows the news. You must have heard about this whole Best Picture Oscar diversity standards that are going to be put into place in 2024.
Yep.
Where films have to hit 2 of 4 different diversity benchmarks
yep.
in order to even qualify to win a Best Picture nomination for to hopefully win the Academy Award.
Yes.
You must love this, knowing what a big fan you are of forced inclusion and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I like fake diversity, and I enjoy all that stuff greatly.
No, I know you do. So that's great. So, you know, what's interesting is that a lot of the former Best Picture winners are being threatened mm-hmm. by having their Oscars taken away, by being stripped of their Oscars,
yeah.
unless they go back and sort of re-edit and re-diversify, whatever that means, their movies. So I was wondering if you could sort of, you know, I know you've got a lot of friends in Hollywood, mm-hmm. You know, Brad, the director, but mm-hmm. Lots of other hot industry contacts. Mm-hmm. You know, when you go to your pedophile parties and such, where you see all the sort of movers and shakers of the industry. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us how some of these movies are going to be more diverse?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you so much. I was wondering if you could tell us how some of these movies are planning to, you know, with all your Hollywood connections, how these movies are going to, show how woke they are and what changes they're going to make. And we might as well start right there with Schindler's List.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Schindler's List is not a particularly inclusive film.
It lacks
diversity for sure. I mean, you have
problematic.
No black characters, no mm-hmm. Asian characters, no Native American characters. No. So it'll be modified. The camp scenes will be reshot to reflect a more diverse concentration camp environment. Mm-hmm. There'll be more Hispanic and black Asian concentration camp prisoners. Mm-hmm. There'll be
nice.
Less ableism. I mean, obviously, the Nazis were known for killing people who weren't able to, say, walk or were missing a limb or incapable of working. And the scenes will be reshot to show that they would be assigned to some kind of labor that they would be capable of doing. Mm-hmm. obviously, the camp barracks had been split into male and female barracks.
Right. Oh, gosh, you can't have that.
That's it. Well, there have to be multiple barracks to accommodate a variety of gender identities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good.
So that it's a more inclusive, welcoming environment.
Right. And we want to definitely, include as many people as we can in this genocide.
Right. And so, yeah, it's just going to be, you know, I wish Spielberg had this vision back then. But, you know, it takes time to learn, you know, to awaken. That's the whole point of, you know, now you see.
You know, so, which is a good lesson to people. I mean, he takes, you know, he's Jewish, so he takes this Jewish outlook
right.
to things and puts this sort of Jewish spin on the movie. And like, how are other races supposed to sort of enter into that and relate to it at all? It makes no goddamn sense.
No, it's typical Spielberg. He made the Holocaust Jewish-centric.
Man. Well, it sounds like at least the studio that made it is going to get this right. That's good.
Yeah, no, they're going to try.
And Tyler Perry is directing the reshoots?
Yes.
Cool. Okay, good. Well, it sounds like it's going to really be improved.
And he'll make a cameo.
Oh, tell us about that.
Well, it's going to be a Totenkampfgruppe Führer Medea is going to make an appearance. She just kind of shows in and does a camp inspection and oversees the testing of Zyklon B. before getting out of the camp. Typical Tyler Perry.
Well, that's cool. Well, that we need that voice in Schindler's List. Well, cool. Good. That sounds great. I approve all those changes. Here's another interesting one. Mm-hmm. Just the next year. How are we going to make Forrest Gump more inclusive? I mean, because, you know, I mean, Jenny had AIDS and...
it's okay.
I mean,
that's okay.
That's okay?
It's okay that she had AIDS, yeah.
Oh, okay.
She's like a Karen.
But we also had a Bubba.
Yeah,
but... So we
had
a black character in it. So what's wrong? How are we going to make this more diverse so they can keep their best Oscar picture?
Yeah, Bubba's problematic in that they took a black actor and they made him mentally challenged.
Mm-hmm.
And, they've realized the errors of their ways and they're going to go back and they reshoot that. What they've done is they're using CGI graphics
mm-hmm.
and they're going to make a Bubba a tiger, just like in that Indian movie.
Oh, So they're going to make him just a wild tiger.
He's going to be a wild tiger.
Huh. Okay. That sort of changes their sort of sweet friendship a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a little weird, but it eliminates him having to talk. The tiger can just kind of look at him and growl. And then Forrest can just, you know, they can dub in some things that he thinks the tiger's saying.
But then there's fewer African-American people in the ensemble cast. So isn't that problematic?
It is, except with CGI graphics. We can go back and make Captain Dan, who's an amputee.
Mm-hmm.
And we can, through the magic of CGI, make him a black amputee. Which really
good.
Ticks off two boxes.
Oh, that's smart.
And they can actually add a pride flag to his wheelchair.
that's Captain Dan.
Three boxes.
Okay, well, all those changes make a lot of sense. It's funny because I had heard a rumor that they were just going to swap out Bubba with Russell Crowe's character in A Beautiful Mind. They were just literally going to swap those people and make Bubba like a black genius and make Russell Crowe, a super retarded math professor.
Yeah, it had been talked about.
Okay, but so they didn't go that way.
They didn't go that way.
That could have fixed two best pictures in one, which is why I think they were looking at it.
Yeah, that's exactly why they were looking at it. Yep.
Good. Huh, okay. Yeah. So here's one, 2004. A lot of people don't think about this as a best picture because it made a lot of money and was super popular. But in 2004, The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King won the best picture Oscar, which is awesome. But tell us about how they're going to sort of make that a little bit more palatable for today's audiences and let them get their Oscar back.
Well, one big problem is Gandalf.
Oh, why is that?
Well, he's known as Gandalf the White.
It's true.
And, you know, it's seen by many as being kind of, as if he's some kind of superior character, this white supremacy coursing through the film, Gandalf the White in charge. They're going to change his name to Honky Wizard. And so, you know, which takes away, it's a little more demeaning.
Yeah.
So it kind of takes away from Gandalf the White. Well, like, oh, Honky Wizard's here. He's doing a spell.
Doing a spell. Man, you're ripping off the dialogue of that movie.
Yeah, I remember
it. Pay royalties,
that
dude.
Stuff locked in. You know, I've seen it so many times. I remember all the scenes as if it were yesterday.
Okay. All right, go on, please.
The elves had zero diversity.
True.
You know, except the only diversity in the elf kingdom was the pointiness of the ears.
Right.
You know, I mean, the elf ladies were very attractive and the elf men were somewhat effeminate. So they're going to mix up, you know, they're going to reshoot the elf scenes.
Oh, okay.
A little more, you know, diversity elf-wise.
Mm-hmm.
They want to have more ambiguity about the genders of the various hobbits.
Okay.
And so they're going to add like a hobbit bathing scene where you realize that they have no genitals whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll just be like, oh, what's going on here? I guess it's a neither.
Well, I think that's no problem at all. You don't even need CGI because, as everyone knows, Elijah Wood has no genitals and he played Frodo. So we could just get Elijah back in for a day of reshoots and I think we're good.
Yeah. I mean, his genital region will look a little older, but.
Hey, it's still, as long as it's just a big blob of smooth skin. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be totally fine.
Jack Silverstein Helmuth.
Yes, Brian.
Is that your middle name, Silverstein?
Not even close.
All right, Jack. Well, let me tell you.
I was yes-anding you, Brian.
Thank you.
I wasn't going to stop your momentum and rain on your parade.
Thank you for not raining on my parade, Jack.
You're welcome. So what's up, Brian? What do you want to talk about?
It's overwhelming how much news happens every day, Jack. Is that not true?
It's not true.
Would you? It isn't true?
No, it's the thing you said. It's not true.
It's not true. There's a ton of news every single day, Jack. Every day is like this crazy news cycle. And mainly because of Trump, he can tweet and just set the news cycle off. He can say something, news cycle. Something happens, something doesn't happen. Doesn't matter. Every single day is a crazy, crazy news cycle. And what happens when that happens, Jack, is that other news falls through the cracks.
That's true.
There's news that we're not getting because there's just so much attention paid to Donald Trump and this, Donald Trump and that. And I'm the guy who goes and I dig out the news stories that we're not seeing, we're not hearing, and I'm bringing them to you and the people who listen to the podcast.
That's great. I would love to know some of these stories that are not getting as much ink as they should. So please tell us. Let's hear what's out there.
Allow me to tell you, Jack.
Please.
Jack, have you heard of CNN?
Yes.
Well, CNN will be changing the name of its voter registration campaign over fears that it might seem too partisan. The original campaign, titled Get Out and Vote, But Not for Donald Trump, caused an outcry among individuals who felt that the title lacked objectivity and was proof of the network's inherent bias. CNN's Brian Stelter, who has a thumb for a head, denied the accusation and said that the network was doing its best to stay neutral. CNN host Chris Cuomo stared vacantly at the camera for 40 seconds before announcing that the new campaign would be titled Go Vote America, although critics contend that Cuomo silently mumbled for Biden while staring at the teleprompter, which he calls the magic word machine. Go Vote America ads will run on the network from now through the election, as will Fox News Channel's campaign titled Vote for the Glorious, Munificent, and Exemplary Leader Donald J. Trump. The J is for Jesus.
Wow. I missed that story. And weird, because it sort of is about Trump a little bit.
You're right. It is.
Yeah.
A little bit.
That's how bad it is. It's even infected the segment that's about not Trump.
That's right. It's everywhere. Certainly
that's it, Brian, right?
You'll know when you hear this sound, Jack.
How much are we paying those trumpet guys?
It's $340 every time they toot.
Not good.
No, we're operating at a loss. See, they did it again.
You got to control those guys.
Stop it, guys. On Tuesday, New York Mayor Bill de Blasio narrowly beat Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot and Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler to win the coveted shitty-ass mayor award. In an acceptance speech on Thursday, the feckless and witless sludge-brained son of an undercooked pancake and mentally challenged hobgoblin said he was, quote, absolutely delighted, end quote, to receive the award, noting that he'd never won an award before and was not ever expecting to. The incompetent, butt-crack-educated, boxer-soiling halfwit, whose crowning accomplishment to date has been dropping and killing a groundhog on Groundhog Day, said he could not wait to share the news with his criminally negligent wife, and he would do so as soon as she returned from defecating on a pile of $850 million taxpayer dollars. The largely uneducated and phenomenally unread de Blasio said he'd worked extra hard this year on winning the award and believes the tipping point was disappearing from work for months while running an absurd narcissistic presidential campaign and not having a plan to open public schools 2 weeks after the schools should have opened. Following his acceptance speech, the bumbling castrato dropped his trousers and bent over the podium to allow all members of the city teachers and police unions to have their way with him.
Gosh, that should have made more news.
You'd think it would make more news.
I mean, that seems sensational enough that people might pay attention. There's some clickbait in there, is what I'm saying.
Well, there's video out there, and it's crazy.
That is crazy. Well, I mean, well deserved. Let me just say, I'm very proud of our mayor, and gosh, that's just great. He, you know what? He deserves it.
You're right. He does deserve it. He earned it.
Good for him.
Well, you ready to spend $340?
Oh, I dread it. Yeah, go ahead. I mean, we can't do the segment without the music.
Also in awards news, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences recently announced new criteria for films that want to qualify for a coveted Oscar. According to an Academy spokeshuman, films that wish to be considered for the 2024 Oscars and beyond must adhere to 37 specific guidelines designed to make films more diverse, inclusive, equitable, and all the other buzzwords, and to make sure that marginalized groups are always represented regardless of the storyline. Going forward, all films must draw from a pool of 8 characters authorized by people with degrees in ethnic studies and will receive extra Oscar consideration if they use all 8. The authorized character pool includes Jamise, a black female computer hacker with one kidney, Antifa Bill, a noble warrior who hits elderly hate speech people over the head with a padlock, a doctor who authorizes gender reassignment surgery for 4-year-olds, and Injun Joe, a wise and good-hearted Native American who's allergic to concrete.
Oh,
In addition, all films must include a scene where a mean white billionaire with a top hat and monocle is killed by a leopard. While many film studios complain that the requirements are onerous and ham-fisted, executives at Disney said that coincidentally, a mean white billionaire with a top hat and monocle was the main plot of the next Star Wars.
Yeah. Well, that feels good. Wow, Brian, that's, you know, we were just talking about the Oscars. It's so...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good to get a little more detail on that subject.
That's crazy. I mean, just eight characters you can draw from.
Boy, and those are Injun Joe. I mean, he really hates concrete, huh?
Yeah, it makes him sneeze. He's concrete intolerant.
Well, and Brian, that there can't be any more news. I mean, newspapers aren't big enough to fit this many stories into. So certainly that has to be it.
That is it.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
That's a huge news.
That's big news.
That's big news. And that's big news you missed.
That's big news you missed, Jack. I got it.
You did. And you gave it to us. And we thank you for it.
Well, I thank me for it.
I know you do.
Thanks.
And thank you all for listening.
Thank you for listening, Jack.
I don't listen to this. Not a big fan.
That was questionable material. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast. Make sure to review the podcast. Make sure to visit qmpodcast.com for episodes, show notes, and bonus material.